Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably is brought to you in collaboration with Calm, obviously, Dave, obviously, and Murdoch London Barbers.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably. How are you all doing out there? Hope you're doing all right. I hope that you're taking care of yourself. And most importantly, I hope you're just doing as best as you possibly can during all of this. I'm doing all right, in case you were wondering. Don't know if you were, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Having quite a nice time. Anything interesting happening in my life? No, because we are in local lockdown in the northeast at the minute, where as of today when I'm recording this, it is officially illegal to hang out with anyone who doesn't live in your house. So the government have said I can legally only hang out with my mum and dad because I'm cool as fuck, guys. Anyway, let's move on from all of that and dive into today's episode, where we are joined by comedian, author, and all-round incredible human, Jen Brister, where we will be discussing motherhood, celebrating difference, and lovely green jumpers. Enjoy!
Good morning! Hello, and welcome to... You did a little giggle there.
Yeah, sorry. I really love your intros. They're so happy.
They're so perky. It's not even... this is genuinely how I like... I'm miserable when I wake up in the morning, but I don't sound it. Welcome to another episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably, where we are joined by someone who has an excellent jumper on.
Thank you.
Really like it. It's Jen Brister.
Oh.
And a lovely jumper.
Do you like my jumper?
I do, yeah.
It's a nice colour, isn't it? It's a bit of colour for winter. It's nice green. It's a chunky knit, so it's actually a bit too chunky for my coat. I mean, this is too much information. But you know when you buy a jumper and then it's like, oh, I really like this jumper, and then you cannot fit anything over the top of it.
Yeah.
And that is where I'm at.
You look so like round whenever you've got a coat on.
I just feel like I'm in one of those escape suits or something while I'm wearing this jumper. But other than that, it was a real find.
Amazing. We kick off by asking, we normally don't kick off by complimenting jumpers.
That's, we don't.
That was just for you.
Oh, I feel very lucky, if I'm fortunate.
When was the last time you felt calm?
Well, I find calm is increasingly hard to find, that sense of like just a little bit of peace. Increasingly now, because I have children, and that makes it difficult to have any moments of peace. But actually, I suppose calm would be the wrong word, but moments of just feeling where I'm not thinking a million things at once is often when I'm being distracted by my kids. So I suppose that's a kind of feeling calm.
Yeah,
not calm in the sense of like I just feel really serene and at one. But I find myself not thinking about or worrying or anxious about all the things I'm normally feeling worried or anxious about. I mean, it doesn't last long. I mean, let's be honest. What are we talking
moments.
About? It's just fleeting. But aside from that, I have started doing... You're going to laugh at this, but I have started doing yoga again. And partly because I just need to be alone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not alone because I'm doing... There's mm-hmm. other people in the room with me, obviously, but in my head. And there is moments of calm or moments of like, this is really, can't do this, I'm going to throw up. And I think you just find whatever it is that works for you, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, calm, that's rare, isn't it?
Yeah, so rare.
So rare to feel really. And even if you do, even when I'm doing yoga, I'm being slightly disingenuous. My brain is thinking about a million things yeah. when I'm supposed mm-hmm. to be meditating. I mean, I'm not. I don't really know how people meditate.
No, I don't at all. I've tried it so many times.
The voice
as well.
Is creeping very quickly.
Yeah, the moment they say, because I therapy last week, my therapist said to me, just make sure your mind goes blank. I was like, what are you all about?
But how do you do that?
That's not a thing that people do.
When people are like, clear your mind, I'm like, I can't, it's too full.
Now I'm thinking about more things than I was before you told me to
do
that.
Exactly, I had less things in my brain before you told me to clear my brain. I think somebody told me that there was something about a lot of these meditation apps, or I guess with yoga and with those sorts of things, that the meditation comes with repetition. So you're repeating the same thing over and over again. It's a bit like Catholics do when they they do the rosary. That's a form of meditation, because you're saying the same thing over and over again, and you're sort of moving from bead to bead, and that becomes meditative. I mean, I'm not saying that I know how to do that, I'm just saying that's what somebody told me. Okay,
I've never thought about it like that before, but I think calm for me would just be my brain thinking the least amount of things that it can. Because I don't think I'm ever going to have a moment where my brain is going, cool, do you know what? Everything's fine. Let's just chill out.
I think that's why I quite like routine.
Yeah.
Because then, again, it's not like calm, but when things are going to plan, and a plan that I know always happens, I'm like, this is fine. But then you get like a delayed train and you're like, well, that's my day over.
Yeah. Well, that's fucked it. Yeah. Thanks a bunch, mate.
I leave the house at this time. It takes me this long to walk. I get on this train. I get here this time. What can go wrong? Mm. A lot.
Yep. Yeah, a lot. As I learned coming back from Falmouth a few weeks ago. But I think there is a sense of control, isn't there? We all want to feel like we're in control of our lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not real. We're not.
Yeah.
But that is what can give us a sense of peace, or not peace, but a sense of calm, feeling that we're like, okay, I know what I'm doing, I know where I'm going, this is going to happen, this is how it's going to work, you know, which is why when you're doing a job, which is like, if you're self-employed or if you're not working to a particular structure, it can really affect your mental health, because you don't have those very strict, I don't know, boundaries or parameters whereby if I do this, then I get this, and I achieve this, and then I have this. And I think as stand-up comedians, a lot of stand-up comedians, we might not always, but struggle with mental health because everything we do is so unstable.
Yep.
And not just our career prospects, which are very unstable, but just every time we walk on stage. That, you know, there's a sense of not knowing what's going to happen then. So we all try to find ways of controlling something in our lives in order to make us feel like we're not drowning.
The anxiety kind of breathes on uncertainty.
Yeah.
And that kind of idea that there is no control, that's where it all comes in. The paranoia and the worry and all these different kind of ideas that put your body into fight or flight, and then your chemicals in the body are going absolutely bananas. Well, that kind of idea of stability, that's why all of my like anxiety has poured itself into routine, like you. Like my days are pretty much identical, and I will eat the same things, and it's going the other way now, where it's becoming slightly worrying that everything I do is exactly the same and I'm a very boring person because of it. But it's about finding that balance and kind of that level of uncertainty, especially in kind of for any sort of freelance work, is
I've got a specific seat I book on the train.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
On the LNER trains, because obviously they're the ones that go like London, Newcastle, Edinburgh. Yep. So that's a route I do a lot. Or like if I'm going to York, I travel probably on LNER the most.
Can you choose your seat?
Yeah, you can choose your seat.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I choose B13, even though some people will be like, oh, 13, an unlucky number. But it's close enough to the toilets without being like right next to the toilets. I know if I need a wee, I'm not having to like go staggering down the train. It's close to the luggage rack. So if I've got luggage, I know I can keep an eye on it.
Oh my
God. It's close to the entrance when you get on the carriage. So when you get on, it's like the third or fourth row or something. So I know I can get to my seat quite quick. And it's the window by a plug socket. So whenever I'm booking a train, B13, and I get fuming if someone's booked B13, I'm like, that's my seat. That's
I really hope someone that listens to this podcast books that for the entirety.
Watches my gift list and goes,
Also, carriage B.
Oh, shit.
It's a quiet coach as well. Yeah.
Ah, is it? Mm-hmm. It's the quiet coach. Yes. Okay. Because I'm just trying to figure out, because first class is always at the front or the back, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I was just trying to figure out if that bit was first class. Is it first class?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a weird humble brag if it was in first class. Yeah. And you never mentioned it.
It was just a deliberate way for me to mention that.
Everybody else knows it's first. Anyone that travels first class will know.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's all. I just needed to reach those people.
Yeah. But that's something that for me, like, because obviously stand up involves so much travelling uncertainty. I'm like, well, at least when I get that train, I'm sat in the same place.
You've got a little bit of control in one situation.
Totally, yeah. Comforting, yeah.
I totally get that. I absolutely hate the random potluck sort of roulette of me not knowing what my seat's going to be when I get on the train. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, am I going to be sitting on the outside? Am I going to have a window seat? Am I going to be sitting next to someone?
Exactly.
You know, I'm like, is the plug socket? So many times recently, the plug socket hasn't worked. I know this is not really very important, but when you're on a train for 4 hours and you can't charge your bloody phone,
yes,
it can feel like, it just feels like the end of the world.
It is, and it feels so much longer than it actually
just
is.
Just the whole time, all you're doing on the phone, on the train going, oh, at 36% battery. Well, yeah. I mean, what the hell? I better not talk to anyone. Look at it. It's got to last. Oh, no, it's tragic. I can totally get why you do that.
A bit of routine.
Yep.
Especially when you live a life that's relatively unpredictable, to find bits where you can have that element of, like, stability, I quite enjoy. Mm.
Yeah, we're all, as human beings, we all sort of, to a lesser or greater degree, we're all slaves to some form of routine that, whether we resent it or not, if we kind of need it.
Yeah.
Because when it goes, when it's gone, it just leaves you feeling completely, like, unanchored and out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So we all do, you know, like, we've all got our own little kooks or whatever that we do to make things feel like, oh yeah, I've got this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, like, being a kid and being like, I can't wait to move out and have freedom and do what I want and not answer to anybody. And now I've got that, I'm like, oh, I quite miss having someone to just make my decisions
make my
for
dinner.
Me.
Yeah.
Isn't it quite nice when you just came home and were told what you were having to eat? Those were the days.
Those were the good old days. Yeah, I know. But the whole idea of freedom is a complete myth.
Yeah. Completely, Natalie.
Yeah.
When was the first time you became aware of mental health being a thing, be it negative or positive?
Probably quite early on, because I have, my oldest brother has, I would say, he's never been diagnosed, but I would say Asperger's, probably, and suffered from very severe anxiety as a young lad, probably from adolescence through to, you know, his mid-30s, I would say. Maybe late, early 30s. I mean, he still has anxiety, but he doesn't have it. It's not debilitating anymore. Mm. So I would say very, very acutely aware, because, you know, when you're living with someone who has that, you see it when it's bad, when it gets really bad. And also, I suppose, you know, as an adult, you can look back, can't you, in hindsight, and see friends or other members of your family that might have been struggling, and we didn't have the language or the empathy for it. And I think we weren't educated about mental health as being important.
Mm.
Or it was, when I was a teenager, it was still very much pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get on with it. So that idea, rather than your mental health being as important, if not in some ways, in a lot of ways, more important than, you know, your physical health. Because once your mental health goes, then everything goes. So, yeah, very early on.
Mm. I don't know if this is a valid question. Your mum's Spanish, am I right?
She is,
Spanish?
Yeah.
Is there any difference with, do you think, being brought, like, with a Spanish mother? Has been any different? Because when I think of, like, British parents' attitudes to mental health, it always feels very, like, stiff upper lip.
Yep.
And I wondered if it was any different.
I think my mum is quite unique, irrespective of where she's from. She's just a very unique woman. I think she was very aware. She knew that my brother had mental health problems, and she really fought for him to get help. But so my brother is really lucky. We all are, but he's really lucky that my mum really was like, no, she wasn't having it. So when the GPs would go, well, we don't really know, or we think it's schizophrenia, or everyone was schizophrenic back then, like literally everyone got diagnosed with schizophrenia. My mum was like, I just don't think that is correct. And she really fought for him. And I suppose, I don't know if it's a cultural thing, because I think there are members of my family in Spain who aren't very open, actually. But my mum's really, like, you know, she lets it all out, you know. So talking about all of that stuff, probably helped, maybe.
Oh, definitely.
Rather than pretending it wasn't happening or bottling it up. So I think a mixture of just who she is as a human being and her being Spanish probably was a good cocktail.
Good combination.
Yeah, it was a good combination to sort of tackle and talk about stuff like that. But I would imagine it was I was quite young at the time. I imagine it was quite lonely for her because there wasn't any... I don't think the charity mind was there, but I don't remember really knowing that it existed. Mm. I don't know if it had the same sort of profile it does now, where you thought, OK, well, I can phone up these people. They might be able to give me some advice or whatever about what to do with my son. Mm-hmm. You had your GP, and if your GP didn't help, then that was that, really. Yeah. Or you could go to a psychiatrist, but often everything was very heavily medicated. Mm-hmm. So the second my brother went to a psychiatrist, he just went on loads of, like, drugs, like lithium and this other drug, I can't remember. And then he started to get, like, caused physical... ticks and pain, you know. So my mom was like, get off those.
Yeah.
So it was very complicated, and I think my mum trying to navigate that must have been really difficult. But I think she eventually found somebody like a psychologist who was on the same wavelength, and they figured stuff out together. And I think if you can find a mental health professional who you trust, I think that can be quite tricky.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know because things are so different now, but certainly in the 90s, everything was about medication. Mm-hmm. And so because a lot of the time they didn't know what to do, they just medicate you. But if you could find someone that you trust, then, then that makes such a huge difference. Because I think as a parent, you're only as well as your sickest mm-hmm. child, mm-hmm. So she was always like, your brother, which I mean, like, now as a parent, I completely understand. But at the time I was like, well, we're all right. You got another three.
Yeah.
So do you think motherhood has changed, like, your relationship with mental health?
Oh, God, yeah. I think I'd be really aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a bit too aware. I don't know. Hopefully not like one of those helicopter mums. But yeah, I would think so. And I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a positive thing. Mm. I think everybody, even in this country, is much more open to talking about it, mm-hmm. don't you think? In a
yeah, way definitely.
That, I don't remember having these conversations about mental health when I was growing up.
Or, not at all.
Or even that mental health was a thing. We didn't think of it as something that you needed to, look after or...
Mm-hmm. Even me, and I'm like not that old. I think when I was like a teenager, which is what, 10 years ago.
You looked directly at me then when you said not that old. Cheers, mate.
She would have looked at me, but I'm just a little to the side, so it's a bit harder to crane your head round.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When I think of being a teenager and talking about mental health, it was you were crazy, like in a institution or whatever, and that there was nothing before that. And that wasn't even that long ago to be that unclued up about mental health. Mm.
I think we've come a long way, and I think it's helped that a lot of high profile, TV people have been very honest about their mental health, which has made people go, oh, well, you seem really together and la la la, but because I think if you haven't been through it and you can't possibly imagine what it's like.
Yeah.
If you haven't suffered from anxiety or depression, I mean real depression, not like feeling a bit low for a couple of days, but actual debilitating depression, it's absolutely impossible for some people to be able to empathise or see or understand what that might be like and how it's, when that happens, you cannot function.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just having people that are quite high profile going, I've had that, I've suffered that, people like Stephen Fry, then people kind of think, oh, well, my son's got that or my brother's got that. That means, okay, that makes... I know this sounds dumb, but it does. It kind of humanises the illness.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't even want to call it an illness because I think sometimes it's... I don't know. I think, my brother having anxiety and a lot of it was down to the fact that he's aspergic. And I don't think of his Asperger's as being an illness. I think that's just part of who he is.
Yeah.
So we're all much more aware of how we use our language and how we perceive mental health, and I think it's really positive. And with regards to my children, because we're all talking about it a lot more, I think particularly for young men, it's hopefully a bit easier for men to be able to say, yeah, I feel this or I feel that, and for people to go, that's actually okay for you to talk about your feelings. Because I think certainly my generation, men were not allowed at all to have feelings, which is absolutely absurd,
yeah,
isn't
completely.
It?
Yeah.
And then we're like, oh, there's a rise in suicide in young men, and you're like, or men, you know, from this age to this age, it's like, yeah, of course. you can't cut off you know, 50% of the population and say you people aren't allowed to feel. Is that okay? You've hit adolescence, now shut it down. All those emotions and feelings, you know, like, I've got two boys, they cry all the time. What am I going to say when they hit like adolescence, right? And now the tears stop, but the feelings stop, the emotions stop. If you feel anything, please go to a pub and kick the shit out of a stranger. And that is the man thing to do. So I hope that we can keep that dialogue going. But it's tricky, isn't it? Because your influence is so diluted as a parent. And whatever we do, it's amazing how quickly they adopt the boys do this, girls do that shit. I mean, that's that happened very quickly.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they've got two mums, and one of them was like, I don't like pink. And I was like, I don't even know where this has come from. We bought you a tutu for your birthday, so get on board, all right?
I think it's just so important when it comes to the representation part of it. It's in so many different genres and stuff, especially with young people, of having access to the kind of people that they look up to, like YouTubers, and I know it all changes, like musicians and stuff like that, and making sure that that kind of conversation is just written into the narrative in a normal way to speak, like how Edinburgh's been for the last few years, of kind of, you go see a show and then it kind of, it caveats into a mental health narrative for three, five minutes, and it's kind of like, no, that's just part of the joke. That's just a way, because it's such a normal part of life now that we can actually just discuss it in a normal way. And having that in so many different places, I think, is just, it's really wonderful. Like, I watched Doctor Who at the weekend, and it was all about mental health.
Really?
And it was like, they showed a positive young male friendship. They talked about their mental health quite openly. And then at the end, they discussed kind of loneliness, suicide, of depression, all these different things.
That's amazing.
In an episode of fucking Doctor Who.
I know, that's fantastic.
And I got to the end of it and I was crying and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. But it's like, I've never seen anything like that, especially because so many young people watch it.
It's so important.
Yeah.
And also, I think, what you know, that showing those positive friendships between young men, where they are communicating, and it not being seen, oh, you poof, you know, that this is, you know, it sounds obvious, but to normalise that and say, well, you should be talking about this. And you know, and I know that men communicate differently from women, but I've got enough male friends to know that it's really important to them to be able to talk, to express themselves. And whilst they might not, you know, I'm not saying when they go on a stag do they want to sit around talking about their feelings, but you know, that generally speaking, on a day-to-day basis amongst their peers, that they can have those conversations, because otherwise you get into a situation where there's no way out for them. And you know, it just feels like, as a society, we spend the whole time being in a constant state of surprise when horrific things happen, but then never look to the grassroots of why those things are happening. And it's and over and over and over again. And particularly as a parent, you have a responsibility to try to tackle those things as quickly and as early as possible, and also talk about feelings and communication with your children. But I think also cannot do it on your own, because the biggest impact is outside of the house. So the second my children leave, I can't control what's being said to them and what they see or what they experience. And so I really think these sort of things really should be happening at school as a part of the curriculum, not like, oh, our school's really great because it talks about these things, you know, like about depression or feelings of suicide or, you know, whatever it is. I think these things should be communicated at primary school, really.
Yeah.
I think secondary school sometimes is a bit late.
Because habits are formed by then.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, if you're self-harming, you're self-harming probably at the end, at the tail end of primary school. So you need to get in early. But I don't know. We're just so conservative about certain things, like talking about sexual health or talking about homosexuality or trans issue in schools, or talking about mental health, because we can see the benefits, how it will benefit our children and how it will benefit then society, and still nothing. I don't.
It's when you hear people being like, but they don't need to know about those things that young, and it's like, but if they've got the tools that young, then when they're older, they're ready for it.
And
rather
they're hearing
than,
about it anyway.
Exactly.
Do you think if you don't mention gay people at school that children don't know about gay people?
Yeah.
Do you think that a kid with depression, if you don't mention depression at school, isn't experiencing depression?
Yeah.
It just, I mean, we infantilise children, so we pretend that they are, you know, we don't want to accept that children have maybe sexual feelings mm-hmm. or children are working out their identity or working out, you know, lots of things about, we just don't want to, you know, whether or not they feel like they're in the wrong body or whether or not they feel like they're gay. Mm-hmm. This doesn't happen at like, oh, I'm 25 and now I yeah. realise. These things happen over a really long period of time. And, you know, instead we're having arguments about as to whether or not we've got enough English literature in the fucking curriculum. Yeah. You know, it's like, come on, mate.
Yeah, people yeah. have to have the knowledge there to be able to help themselves from such a young age. Mm-hmm. And we now live in a society where we have such access to information from such a young age anyway. They're going to find the information. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for us to kind of gatekeep and go, no, you can't have that bit of information yeah. until you're this old is ridiculous. Like, I saw on Question Time the other night, one of the questions was, is it correct to be teaching LGBTQ plus in primary school?
Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, it is.
Yeah, it's like, how the fuck is this a question?
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. It's just people...
And also when you're talking about LGBT, you know, and I talk about this in my show, but when you're talking about that, what you're not actually, people seem to think that everything around trans or gay or bisexual or people who consider themselves to be gender fluid or whatever, they make it about sex
yeah.
rather mm-hmm. than about identity mm-hmm. and about difference.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you're teaching something at primary school, you're not teaching about sex. You're just teaching about difference.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're not all, you know, white, able-bodied, heterosexual, you know, hashtag living our best lives every second of the day. We're all very different. We're all individuals. We've yeah. got all these different things going on in our lives. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about them openly yeah. and then let's accept that everyone's different. And so then when you are confronted by difference, you're not terrified.
Exactly that.
I had a moment this year, you know, Caitlyn and Jenna went in the I'm a Celeb Jungle where my niece and nephew were explaining Caitlyn Jenner being trans to me, which was so incredible. Like, as if I was the one who didn't know. Never mind that 8 and 5, I had it on and my nephew was like, you know Caitlyn. I said, I do know Caitlyn. Caitlyn wasn't born Caitlyn. Caitlyn was born a different person, and that's absolutely fine. And I was like, I didn't say it wasn't absolutely fine. Like, what are you?
Anti-Lauren, the bigot over
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they picked up your vibe, Lauren.
Yeah. Come over here. Let me tell you a story.
Well, I think it is. It's making sure that when you are, when that kind of difference hits you at a later age, that you don't treat it with fear and terror and all these kind of go-to emotions that you, because you, if you treat something as other, people are going to react in a different way. Sorry, my stomach is going fucking banana. but they are. They're going to treat it with hostility and they're going to treat it with fear. And that's just, it's, if we can kind of nip that in the bud from such a young age when it comes to all of these different issues and just let people live their lives. Mm-hmm. It's literally saying there are so many different ways you could live your life. All of them are absolutely wonderful and you can find out which way you want to do it. We just want to make sure that you're aware of what's happening.
Yeah. And there's no one's attacking anyone else in existing.
No.
No one's existence is going to detract from your civil rights. Or
exactly.
from your whatever you feel, you know, like there was a fear about, you know, when gay people were given the chance to get married that that was going to somehow dilute heterosexual marriage or it was somehow going to undermine it. I mean, you know, it's proven time and time again that every time that we become more aware of other groups and more aware of other people and more accepting, that it just makes our society more robust. It makes us better
yeah.
as individuals as well as a group, which always flummoxes me why we constantly, whenever the next group of society is being sort of persecuted or discriminated against, that we have to explain that again.
Mm.
It's okay, you know, yep. equality. Why wouldn't we want equality for everybody? It just seems crazy. Yep. But anyway, apparently we don't, so there we are.
should we play some anxiety bingo?
Yeah, right. I actually looked at that before because normally I spend about 5 minutes rummaging in my notebook. So I give you like two sides of the same coin of like anxious scenarios, and it's which one you would not necessarily prefer to be in, but least hate being in.
Okay.
Okay, so right. Would you rather get every opportunity but fail every time, or never get a single opportunity at all?
Well, I suppose get the opportunity and fail, because I'd rather give it a go. And also, I think in failing, you learn every time.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm the opposite. I'm the opposite. I mean, I'm so scared of being a failure that I think I'd rather never get the opportunity and be that one who's like, oh, one day I'll show you. One day.
the only thing I'd say is that the one day one is for me would be the least fulfilling.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because I fail a lot. So I'm quite comfortable in my failure.
We've got a couple of minutes left. You want to ask our final question?
Yeah. If you could go back to your younger self and give yourself some advice on mental health and living without misery, what would you tell yourself?
I would say stop caring what everybody else is doing. It doesn't matter. It's not going to impact on you. And just follow, be clear about what you want and follow your own path. And that will be, you'll get there a lot quicker than you seem to have, you idiot.
That.
That's really lovely.
That's proper mother advice. Yeah, that's
really
someone
good.
Who's got
that's
his
made me
shit
feel
together.
Really nice and warm inside.
That's amazing.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me,
Can't
guys.
Wait to be a mum and be wise.
Best time, Lauren. Best time.
Oh, and that's it for today. What a lovely, lovely little chat we had there. I mentioned at the start in my little intro that Jen is an author. She is. She's got a book out called The Other Mother, which is an honest parenting tale for every kind of family. So you can get that now from all good bookshops and general places that sell books, which I think are just bookshops, to be honest, aren't they? Thanks so much to Jen for being such a lovely guest. Thanks to Aaron, as always, and the team at Dave & Calm. If you did enjoy this podcast, please remember to give us a like, a rating, a review, subscribe, all those shenanigans. And if you do happen to have a few quid spare, if you would like to donate to Calm, that would be absolutely wonderful. They do great work and we should be giving them all the help we can. Thank you so much for listening and hopefully see you next time round. Bye. My voice went really funny there, but I'm not re-recording this because I'm at the end. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got 6 comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your social history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.